Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And this is Travis.
And tonight we're talking about the 1993 masterpiece directed by Lasse Hallström, What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Brother Jay?
Okay.
Why is this on your list of judgment?
I think this is a great movie.
I think it's well acted. Travis, what do you think? What are your first opinions of this movie?
Well, my opinions are a little biased because of the reason I saw it. Well, so this is one of those movies that Jason explained to me that I had to see. I had to see it. And I have to admit that I hadn't seen it in a long time since Jason had showed it to me. And so rewatching it again for this podcast, I think I appreciated it more the second go round than I did the first time I saw it. Because the first time I thought it was, you know, it had the drama and it also had a lot of humor in it, but it was more on the drama and kind of depressing in some places the second time.
Oh, I was depressed leading up to watching this for the second time. I dreaded watching this movie.
Ooh.
I really felt like I was taking one for the team.
Oh, no, that's too bad, because as a whole, I don't think this movie is actually a depressing movie. I think it's actually really positive. It's got some very positive things to say.
Well, I don't feel like, I mean, I think I was just whinging pretty much, but as we go through it, I'll tell you, one thing about this movie is, it is very well acted by everyone.
Well, and you know, the story about this is that this is my first Leonardo DiCaprio movie I ever saw. And I did not know that he was not mentally disabled.
Oh, he's great.
I didn't know he was acting. I thought he was just a mentally disabled kid that they had found that they got him to do this part. I didn't realize that he was just acting. And I, you know what? He should have won every damn award possible because he did an incredible job. And everybody did a great job. This whole movie, you're right, is very well acted. But really, I mean, he did an incredible job.
I read actually about the training that he did on his own to pull off that performance. And it really was, I think, I'm trying to think how to describe it, because there's a level of realness that I think actually makes it almost sadder how accurate he pulls off a developmentally disabled child, adult, adolescent.
Well, it definitely was effective. The first time I saw the movie, I probably didn't like Johnny Depp, his acting style, but I have since read that he did that on purpose. He wanted to, he wanted his character to always appear to be about half asleep. And at first he wasn't sure whether that was the right choice, but Juliette Lewis and the director convinced him that it was. So that's why he carried it through the whole movie. Did you find it off-putting?
I didn't. I thought that he played the overworked, kind of overput upon caretaker that was, you know, constantly struggling to keep everything together. You know, that kind of level of constant activity with adrenalization plus responsibility. You know, I think he, to me, I recognize that behavior because I see some of it in people I know. So, you know, I understand that kind of just like you wake up exhausted. So, I don't have a problem with the choice of it, if you will.
Travis, have you seen the movie The Babadook?
Yes, I have. I love that movie.
Okay, well, I'm only halfway through it, and nothing actually scary has happened yet, but I so identify with the mother who is sleepless and has a kid who just basically is demanding all the time and kind of obstinate all the time.
Yeah, I think that's a good, I think it's a good comparison, because Johnny Depp's character in this, it was very familiar to a lot of individuals, even that I worked with, who worked as caregivers for people either with disabilities or Alzheimer's, those kind of things. Because, I mean, there is this thing of, like, you know, you want to be doing good, and, you know, you're trying all these things, and even when someone's not meaning to be a problem or a pain in the ass or whatever, it grates on you almost even more. And I imagine being a parent's like that too, where it's like, I love you, but I kind of want to choke you right now.
Oh, 100%. I mean, not all the time, not 100% of the time, but definitely there are moments. And I only didn't ask you, Brother Jay, because I know you're not a big horror movie fan.
Yeah, I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's an Australian horror
movie. I guarantee you, if Jason watched The Babadook, he would not sleep for days.
And a sleepless Brother Jay is not a happy Brother Jay to be around, so.
No, I'm not kidding, because I'll tell you, and I know this episode isn't about The Babadook, but it's on Netflix, so any of your listeners who want to watch it, I actually saw it before it went to Netflix, and I will tell you, it is one of the few movies that when I went up the stairs after that and had to search for the light switch, I actually paused and thought about the movie and was like, a movie has not affected me like that in a long time.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I'm halfway through it, and I have to be careful because I don't really want to watch it around the kid.
Oh, no. That would not be a good thing.
Yeah, so. Anyway, back to What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Not necessarily a movie for little kids either.
No,
it's definitely not a little kid movie.
Probably because they'd be probably bored out of their tree.
Well, I don't think that. I mean, it's hard to grasp the concepts of it. Definitely not a kid movie.
Okay, well, let me. It turns out I like the director, although I didn't know who he was. I think his name is Lasse Hallström. I'm going to give it that shot. He's directed.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay, he's directed some of a lot of like uplifting comedies, like happy-go-lucky films, like The 100-Foot Journey, Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, The Shipping News, Chocolat, and Cider House Rules.
Okay, wait a second. So, did you see The 100-Foot Journey?
I did not.
I did.
Was it a knee slapper?
It was a flaming turd of a movie.
And I can't even get through the title, Salmon Fishing in the Yemen.
The 100-Foot Journey, it was just so, I don't even know how to describe. It just wasn't a good movie. And I really love Helen Mirren. But I don't know. It was me and Lori, my lesbian friend, we wanted to go see a movie together, and she picked that movie incredulously to me. And to give you some gravity, she and I were the only two people in the movie theater. The only two people in the movie theater.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of a telling detail of what was yet to come. But it was just such a cloyingly long movie, and the plot was predictable, and it tried so hard, and just wasn't good. I mean, it wasn't. It wasn't like Star Trek V, but and it certainly didn't have any scissors. But yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm sorry that I paid money to go see it in the box office. But having said that, you know, this he also did the ABBA documentary too. But I'm guessing he's from his name that he must be very Swedish, especially because
he is
the. Because the money totals that are posted on IMDb for this movie, which show, by the way, this movie lost money, includes it in U.S. dollars and kroner. So
what's eating Gilbert Gape lost money?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a shame, because like I said, it is well acted. It's just not...
It was estimated an $11 million budget, and it only grossed $9 million.
I think probably after DVD sales and stuff and rental sales or whatever, it probably made its money back.
Possibly. Well, I don't know how many people bought this movie, because it came out at a very odd time. And like my copy of it is just a plain standard DVD and has nothing on it. There's no extra features. There's nothing. I could have English subtitles if I wanted.
That's nice.
I'm like, oh, well, that would be helpful in no way to me.
Okay, I saw Chocolat with our grandmother in the theater, and I like Juliette Binoche, and Johnny Depp is fine, but it wasn't really my style of movie, and I didn't see Cider House Rules until it was on DVD, I think, and I thought that was great, but also not a knee slapper.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I knew what I was getting into. That said, I guess we can get into it unless there's any other groundwork we need to lay.
I'm just going to say that the Swedish director from Stockholm, other than doing the documentary for ABBA, also directed almost every single one of their music videos.
Well, that's awesome, because I love ABBA videos. And as Travis can attest, I think I probably made on more than one Christmas when he lived here, made him sit through the ABBA DVD video that I have. So,
I also am a fan of ABBA.
Are they uplifting, spirited videos?
Oh, a lot of them.
Well, there's one of them where they're like playing a piano. They're playing a piano on a mountain.
Oh, okay.
I think it's probably a keyboard, but
he did direct some depressing ABBA songs. You know,
Super Trooper,
Gun.
There's no depressing ABBA song. Take it back. You're lying. They're all
good. The Winner Takes It All.
That's a great song. It's a song about victory. Victory!
What if you're not the winner?
Well, I don't care about that. That's a bunch of losers.
Victory! Victory! Seagile! Seagile!
Hey, now. But this movie was a beautifully shot movie. I mean, the scenery was amazing, although it was mostly filmed in Texas.
So not in Iowa like it's supposed to be?
Correct.
Let's see. The only other, I think, groundwork we need to lay. Have either of you seen Tropic Thunder?
No.
I don't believe so, no.
So the phrase, never go full retard, does not mean anything to you and make you laugh?
No.
Not for me, no.
Okay. Well, I suggest we should add Tropic Thunder to the list of movies we're going to check out. It's a funny movie that Robert Downey Jr. plays all in blackface.
Oh dear!
I've heard of that,
but it's really it's really effective. It's really funny.
Uh huh.
And it's got Ben Stiller and Jack Black. What I mean, come on.
Yeah, those two are that. See, that just makes it less likely for me to watch. Like Ben Stiller alone, but Jack Black.
You're not going to go rush to see Zoolander 2?
I will see it, but. It will fill me with angst. I loved Zoolander. It was ridiculous, but I knew going into it, it was going to be ridiculous. Again, my favorite Jack Black movie. What's my favorite Jack Black movie? It's The Jackal. Why? Because he gets the shit blown out of him by like a big RPG gun by Bruce Willis. What's the highlight? He dies.
Mars Attacks is a pretty good Jack Black movie.
Ack, ack. He's barely in Mars Attacks.
Well, he dies too, though.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
I don't wish him death in real life. I just wish him death from his acting career.
Yeah, well, you know what? Turns out he doesn't need you, man. He and Kyle Glass will go and do their, I think his name is Kyle Glass, do their...
Kyle Gass?
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, Todd Glass, Kyle Gass.
Okay.
Anyway, so back to What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Blog.
Exactly. Okay, so What's Eating Gilbert Grape? In the small town of Andorra, Iowa, Gilbert Grape, Johnny Depp, is busy caring for Arnie, Leonardo DiCaprio, his brother with a developmental disability, as they wait for the many tourist trailers to pass through the town during the yearly ritual of camping in a nearby recreational area. Arnie is going to be turning 18 soon, and they're getting ready to have a party for Arnie. Arnie is developmentally disabled and kills a grasshopper in the beginning of this movie.
I shouldn't laugh, but Travis can tell you that I constantly will mimic his behaviors in speech, and so I will inappropriately repeat them in public in opportune moments often. So,
I think you're allowed to say both "Run, Forrest, run" and "I killed him, Gilbert. I killed him" while crying.
Yeah. Well, that and that's it.
And if you can't say that, then the terrorists have won.
Yeah, but I think constantly what I used to say is, "I killed him, Gilbert, I killed him."
This whole movie really is kind of sweet.
It is because it's a movie about family.
That's true.
And it's a movie about, you know, what you do for your family that you just do because they're family and that's what you do. But also there's a lot of, there's a lot going on in the family. But there's also, to me, we bring our own baggage on this trip. But to me, it's a very warm family. I mean, they're very caring. And yes, there's a lot going on. And yes, there's some crap going on. But, you know, they care about each other. They're kind of a cohesive unit. And as much as they can be cohesive with the unfortunate, happenstance of their dad's death and, you know, their mom's coping.
Okay.
Yeah, and their mom, described in the Wikipedia plot summary, as his morbidly obese mother, Bonnie, played by Darlene Cates, gave up on life after her husband hanged himself 17 years earlier. She spends most all of her time on the couch watching television.
By the way, she's still alive, and she's still doing movies.
When I read about that actress and kind of her backstory and how she got into the movie and her life after the movie, I'm not going to lie, it was more depressing to watch the film.
Oh, yeah, well...
Oh, I don't know anything about her.
Yeah, so illuminate her for us.
All right, so Darlene Cates, the woman who played Mama Grape, was basically, whenever, I think she was like, four, and this is the actress, when she was like 14 years old, her parents got a divorce, and it just totally destroyed her. It was like something that she couldn't cope with. And so she began to eat her feelings. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, I don't always eat my feelings, but when I do, I eat them all. And she did. And she weighed like, she ballooned up to something like 450 pounds and went on the Sally Jesse Raphael show. So that's a dating it. It's like early 80s, okay?
Wow.
So she's on Sally Jesse Raphael, and she's trying to get her life back together. She goes in and has her stomach stapled at a time when not a lot of people did that. And the procedure fails, basically. She loses 100 pounds, but then I guess that the stapling kind of came undone, or she stretched her stomach back out due to not eating properly. And she basically ballooned up to almost 700 pounds. Okay.
Holy criminy.
So what happened was that her weight kind of yo-yoed for a while. And then one of the directors saw some of these, some of these like kind of talk shows and things like that she had been on. And they said, okay, well, we would really like you to be in this movie based on, it was a 1985 episode of Sally Jesse Raphael called Too Heavy to Leave Their House. she was offered the role of Mama Grape, which she accepted. She was originally from Texas and lived in Texas, so it wasn't too difficult. And it was like her first acting gig. They filmed her. She did really well at it. And then after the movie was done, she actually did a couple other things, including like Touched by an Angel, Picket Fences. And then even in, I think it was 2001 or 2002, she did a horror movie called Wolf Girl. And even though most of that film took place in Romania, they flew the stars to Texas to shoot their scenes with the woman because she couldn't fly. And because I'm a total dork, I went Googling, and I found her old biography on GeoCities, which apparently is only now archived in the web archive of the internet.
Oh, wow.
But she wrote her own biography online. I think this was in the late 1990s when this thing was published. But she still lives in a suburb of Dallas, I believe. She hopes to get back into acting, and apparently, from the IMDb thing that I looked at earlier, it looks like she's trying to lose weight so she can kind of restart her acting career.
Well, good for her.
Yeah. See, that's not quite as depressing as all that.
What was depressing was how closely her personal story matched that of Mama Grape.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I think being a man of significant circumference, I mean, I can totally see myself in Bonnie, Mama Grape.
The Don and Mike radio show used to refer to that as men of larger carriage.
Yeah. Hey. So I think that's part of why I was dreading watching the movie again. Cause you know, I don't want to, be seeing myself in the pathetic characters in the movies. And that's why I thought, by the way, Shallow Hal was, although it had really funny parts, it was kind of mean, but anyway,
Shallow Hal.
Yeah. Did you not see Shallow Hal?
No, I saw
Shallow Hal.
Was that the blonde chick in somebody else?
Well, it was another Jack Black movie.
Of course.
And of course. Gwyneth Paltrow is like this 500-pound girl, but he falls in love with her inner beauty. He can only see her inner beauty because of some curse that Tony Robbins put on him, if I remember correctly.
All right, well.
And it's got some funny gags, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like fat jokes in there, which are fine, I guess, but they're at the expense of the character, and the character is not included in on the joke, which is, you know, makes it mean.
As much as this movie is about a very large woman, they don't really make, with the exception, there's some shots that the little kids do, but that's a little kid thing. But I don't think, for the most part, people make fun of her. Although, as we will get into, Gilbert's kind of a dick. So,
well, Gilbert's ashamed.
Yeah, well, ashamed and put upon.
Yeah.
Oh, see, now that makes sense. See, I'm seeing there was the title of the movie, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, has a subtitle: Life is a Terrible Thing to Sleep Through.
Oh my God! Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. That makes his little sleepy routine. That makes more sense.
Oh dear.
Why that was a choice.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, that's a double entendre because it's also talking about the people, but it's also talking about the town because, you know, they're in a sleepy little town.
Oh yeah. No, you know, the part of Gilbert's struggle is that he is stuck in this family that's dysfunctional, which to a certain extent, everybody is. And he's also stuck in this town, which he will never get out of. You know, he talks about, there's an older brother that they just mentioned once. He's the one that got away.
Mm-hmm.
He's their Chuck. What? No happy days laughter. Come on, people. Chuck. Richie's older brother, Chuck.
I think Travis is, it doesn't have any idea what you're
dear
talking about.
Lord, young people.
No, the bad thing is I do. No, the bad thing is I do, because I watch a lot of Happy Days.
No, the bad thing is it was not a successful joke. That was the bad thing.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible thing when you tell a joke.
that dies.
Yeah. Anyway, so, okay. But so back to Gilbert's family. So Bonnie really, she sits on the couch all day long. I mean, she can't climb the stairs. By the way, Darlene Cates didn't climb the stairs either. Even in the scene where she does climb the stairs, she only goes up like two stairs, and then they cut to her being on the second floor. But anywho, the family, though, has a system for everything. The family is amazingly capable. You know, Gilbert takes care of Arnie and kind of keeps up with the housework and brings in money because he works at the grocery store. And his sister, Amy, played by Laura Harrington, is, how old is she supposed to be? Older than Gilbert? Younger than Gilbert?
Oh, I think she's supposed to be older than him.
But she basically is the one that does the cooking and cleaning, I guess. And Ellen, Mary-Kate Shellhart, is, what, 15, going on 16?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's 15. She's 15 going on bitch.
Yeah, she's just a 15-year-old girl, so... But, you know, like they prepare the food in the kitchen and put all the food on this table that they then shuffle out to the couch for Mama. And they eat around the couch so Mama doesn't have to move from the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Which is both touching and sad. But
yeah.
Gilbert is very protective of Arnie. And, you know, Arnie, the doctors told him that Arnie wasn't supposed to live to, what, 10? And now he's turning 18. And as he tells people, he could go anytime. So, Gilbert works at this old supermarket, Lamson's Grocery.
Yeah.
And a food land has opened nearby. And so that business, Lamson's Grocery, is probably doomed. But Gilbert is kind of great. He lies to people in the nice, kind way. I mean, he basically is telling everybody in this whole movie that everything's going to be all right.
Well, he needs it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in the meantime, to complicate things, Gilbert is having an affair with the married woman, Betty Carver, played by Mary Steenburgen. And the scene that I thought was really, really effective was when they cut between Betty Carver kissing Gilbert's neck and Arnie blowing a raspberry in the car. I just thought that was pretty fun. And the Carver family is also dysfunctional. Mr. Carver is an insurance agent. And the kids are snotty little kids who aren't satisfied with the trampoline and always are demanding a pool. And, of course, Mrs. Carver is, you know, frustrated at her life. And Arnie, as you know, although he's a... By the way, I thought he looks remarkably... The retarded Leo DiCaprio looks a lot like regular Matt Damon. I could not get that out of my head. Especially in the water tower scene. He totally looked like a Jason Bourne moment there. When Arnie likes to climb up the water tower. So.
Yeah, and so I have a thing about this. There are towns here that have water towers, and they lock the ladder so you can't climb up them. The first time that kid tried to climb the ladder, why would they put a damn lock on it?
Well, of course, yeah.
Well, so... As someone from a very small town, they actually filmed that water tower. They did a lot of searching to find the water tower that they wanted for that movie, and they found it in Manor, Texas, which is a suburb of Austin. And for the size town that city was before it got bigger, it wouldn't surprise me if it was just that way.
Because there are like six people anyway.
It's not. Well, it's more of because of where it's at and how spread out it is. So the town does actually have about 7,000 people in it. But like when I was growing up, the water tower in the town that I lived in, you absolutely could climb it. People didn't. There was no real reason to. But you could have without any special equipment. Like, the ladder was right there. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, it's a small town. They don't have a lot to do. Tiny police force. Maybe, you know, maybe on their good graces, they just want Gilbert to take care of it without having to put locks on everything.
That's true. You wouldn't want to change your whole town for one kid who is going to go any moment anyway.
Yes.
Plus, although you don't really want him to go off the water tower, though.
True, although from watching those scenes where he gets on the water tower, it really is kind of like this, the whole town coming together and being very happy for, you know, Arnie climbing the water tower. Like, they don't really look at him as you shouldn't have done that. Really, only the police do that.
Oh, no, see, I think that's not true. I think actually all of the town comes together because they want to see what happens when he splats off the water tower.
Yeah, there's a certain freak show.
I don't know, they
show.
Were all clapping and stuff.
Yeah, it's a certain freak show.
Yeah, because it's the Schadenfreude. It's he's gonna fall off. Especially crazy goddamn Crispin Glover. What was his name? Bobby.
I love Crispin Glover in this movie.
He was perfectly cast because he is the perfect creepy undertaker.
Well, what about John C. Reilly? John C. Reilly, I'm happy to see him in anything.
The Burger Barn.
Oh, John C. Reilly.
The Burger Barn discussion made me laugh.
Just John C. Reilly, I don't remember his character, but he could be the same character in Talladega Nights. He could have easily lost his job at the Burger Barn for some reason or another and then end up writing in the same crew as Ricky Bobby. Or did you see The Legend of Dewey Cox?
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's not Spinal Tap, but it's pretty good. Anywho.
Oh, my God.
What?
There's a reason I shouldn't read the trivia for this movie. Despite the fact that animal protection agents were on set to monitor the well-being of the grasshopper, Arnie decapitates in the letterbox, Leonardo DiCaprio accidentally killed it.
Yeah, well, what can you do? I'm sure they had to pay a fine to somebody. Yeah, I thought it was nice to see John C. Reilly, and it was nice to see Crispin Glover all cleaned up. And it's a question of whether John C. Reilly, he could have gone to the same school as Arnie, really. But much like Arnie, although I guess you don't really get to see a lot of Arnie's character, but Tucker is the John C. Reilly character. Tucker's a sweetheart. You know, I mean, there's a whole speech that I'll put in here where Tucker asks how Mama is, and Gilbert says she's fat. And Tucker's like, come on, man, she's not that old big, Gilbert. Listen, I saw this guy at the state fair who was a little bigger.
It almost makes you think he's, like, making moves on Mama.
Well, we'll get to moves later with one Mr. Glover. And then, to add to the mix here, we have a young woman named Becky, Juliette Lewis, and her grandmother are stuck in town when their car pulling an Airstream trailer breaks down. Airstream trailer breaks down. And this is the point where the notes where I put that the dad's dead rant at the dinner table is so great and sad.
Yeah.
And that Mama is just so pathetic and sad. But luckily, we turn around with the tension from that, and we get Crispin Glover's speech at the diner.
Look at those guys out there.
Bert.
Mm-hmm.
They're laughing. They're all happy and waving to their friends. But the next day, and this is the thing that they don't know, they could be lying on the slab. It's kind of harsh. But it's kind of fun, too.
You ever,
What?
You know. Are you tempted, like, want to fool around with the body?
Oh, Tucker, come on.
No, I want to ask.
That's
all right.
I don't know. It makes you uncomfortable.
No, people are very curious about that.
I mean,
no, yeah.
I
the worst thing that we do is we take the bodies, the grotesque ones, the really, really ugly ones. We make jokes about them, you know, harmless jokes. Very harmless jokes, but we come up with some very good jokes about my father and me. But you know, they're dead. And, you know, nobody can see that. Nobody hears anything.
Hi, boys.
Hi. It's harmless. Oh. Hello, Mrs. Carver.
Hi.
These jokes don't hurt anybody. Nobody knows we even make them.
Gilbert?
I'm waiting for your call.
Oh, Mr. Carver, I haven't seen your mother in church lately. How's she doing?
Fine, she's fine.
Ah, thanks. Bye.
He wants to kill you, right?
You prefer a bronze casket?
In the diner, Mr. Carver comes up and tells Gilbert to come to his office. He's got something to talk to him about. So Gilbert thinks the jig is up with sleeping with Mrs. Carver. So, and there's a scene where Mama is jumping up and down, or not really jumping up and down, but like standing up, and the floor underneath her is buckling. So they have
she's stomping on the floor. Yeah.
So they have to get John C. Reilly's character Tucker to go and try to fix the flooring without her knowing about it. And Arnie doesn't want to go down there because Dad's in there. And that routine is pretty funny. So, as they say in Wikipedia, Gilbert's unusual life circumstances threatened to get in the way of the budding romance between Becky and Gilbert. So Gilbert, who's, you know, he's tired of looking after Arnie anyway, but he's, of course, trying to scam to get more time with Becky. So in order to watch the sunset together, he comes home and tries to rush through a bath with Arnie, where he basically tells him he's a big boy and he can finish the bath on his own. So Gilbert goes out and they watch the sunset, and he arrives home and crashes, and he gets up the next morning to find that Arnie is still in the bathtub shivering. And that's pretty heartbreaking. Of course, now his family is all angry at him. And then Gilbert is finally summoned for real to Mr. Carver's insurance office in a super tense but really funny scene, because Mr. Carver still doesn't know what's going on.
He's like the only person in town that doesn't know what's going on.
Exactly. And Betty Carver says to Gilbert, "Hey, I could have had any guy, but I chose you." Gilbert says, "Why?" She goes, "Because I knew you'd always be there. You'd never leave."
Yeah, it's like the worst backhanded compliment.
Oh, it's horrible. So Mr. Carver gets a frantic phone call from Mrs. Carver while Gilbert's in the office, and he has to drive Mr. Carver home. And Mr. Carver is flipping his chicken.
Look, honey, they're fine. They taste fine. A little burn on top, but just fine. They're wonderful. Boys, here, have some of Mom's cookies. They're really good. Here, come on, boys. Make your mother happy. Make your mom happy. Have some cookies. Please, have some.
Hey.
Boy,
I could have had any guy.
What do you think this is?
But
Doc, come over here. What?
I chose you.
It is a pool, son.
Chose you.
I got your real pool, for God's sake. Look, there's water in here. Come here. Come here. Get over. Come here. Get inside the pool. Get inside this pool with your brother. Come
here. Why did you?
Get inside the pool. Yeah, look. Real water, boys. Okay, so I don't give everything.
Because
I give you all I have for
Christ. I knew you'd always be there. Because I knew you'd never leave.
What the hell else more do you want? What? For God's sake.
Oh my God, he is really flipping out about the cookies.
Someone's gone round the bend.
And about the pool. And so Gilbert leaves that tense scene, and they have this, I guess it's discovered pretty quickly that turns out Mr. Carver had a heart attack and drowned in the pool.
What's going on? He drowned. You're kidding. No, in that. Oh. A kiddie pool, huh, kid? It's like 1 foot deep. Weird, right?
You're out there.
Come on. Shh. Hey.
He had the cardiac arrest, his head bent forward, his knees buckled, and then he just fell face forward into the pool. When she found him, he was already dead.
That's what you don't know. That's what nobody knows.
No, I know it. I saw the body. I prepared it. I know what exactly what I would have seen. I would have seen what if there was any kind of struggle that had gone on.
It was murder.
No.
What do you think? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's possible.
Bob, we're talking about thousands and thousands of dollars.
If she saw, she doesn't it doesn't even if she did want to do what she did want to do that. Even if she did, if you saw somebody laying with their head down in a pool, motionless, or even if they were kind of limply doing that, which he wasn't doing, but even if that, you wouldn't. Well, it was an extreme postcardial infarction, extreme.
So nothing's fishy. Nothing about this.
Hey, go over that girl! Over that girl!
It's perfectly logical.
Even if it's fishy.
Wait
a minute, Tucker. If you've
we're not talking about taking a gun and shooting somebody. We're talking about just pushing along something that's rolling in a direction.
Okay. You get that great reenactment of Bobby and the spoon in the diner, recreating what actually happened as Gilbert is emptying the entire sugar shaker onto the table for some inexplicable reason.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that? He's just dumping pile after pile after pile of sugar on the table.
I did not notice that.
Yeah. And no one really says anything about it. They're just kind of watching him do it.
Yeah. So it was weird.
So then...
there's also a lot of discussions about whether or not Miss Betty, you know, Miss Carver, actually killed him. And the Undertaker is really going out of his way to be like, no. You know, I would have known. I looked at the body myself. I would have known if, you know, there was foul play.
Which is, and it's funny because she, Mrs. Carver, also knows that everybody thinks that she killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, luckily he was well insured. Because she is now able to take a bunch of money and leave this place.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, in an, I guess, uncharacteristic to me, Juliette Lewis character, in that she is actually completely like positive. I mean, she's actually sweet, and yet she, you know, she's smart, but you know, she doesn't have any like darkness to her, which a lot of her characters do.
Yeah, this is no Natural Born Killers.
No, well, I was actually I got a little bit confused and I had to IMDb because she did this movie just after she did Cape Fear. And turns out it was not her that was with Johnny Depp in Benny and June that took place, I think, just before this, too.
Oh, yeah. Benny and June.
So Becky comes close. Or sorry. Becky and Gilbert become closer. And she has this hope and dreams talk with Gilbert where she tells him to tell him what he wants as fast as it comes to him.
Tell me what you want. As fast as it comes to you. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, what do you want? Faster.
Okay. I want a new thing. House. I want a new house. For the family. I want Mama to take aerobics classes. I want Ellen to grow up. I want a new brain for Arnie.
What do you want for you? Just for you.
I want to be a good person. I can't do this. I can't.
Okay.
Where's Arnie?
Which is awfully sweet, but then they realize that he may be a good person, but he's a bad babysitter because Arnie is now wandered off and is climbing this tower again. And this time...
And he climbed higher than he ever had before.
Oh, he was nearly on top of the tower, yes. So the police take him off the... Or the fire department or whoever take him off the tower. And then the police arrest him. And in a really powerful scene, Mama gets dressed and goes to town.
Yeah.
That was hard for me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I found Mom at Home a lot more pathetic than Mama in Town was fierce, I thought. You know, like Becky says later, that she was very, very brave to do that. And nobody expects it, not at the police department.
Well, and I think that, you know, she put the fear of God into the police department because, you know, nobody was going to go 12 rounds with her.
Oh, no.
Also, but again, this is exemplar. This is an example of what I'm talking about. You know, this is family, and her love of her family transcended her own condition to the point where she, as much as she may have been uncomfortable, she put that aside to go and retrieve her son.
Oh, yeah. And she keeps her head held high, well, at least in public.
Yeah.
That image of her getting into the car and driving down the road, which is hysterical, and it's like, you know, the car like tilting at an angle.
Oh, yeah.
The poor car. I mean, because, you know what's going on when you see the car down the road. You just go, oh, my God, it's comedic but sad.
Yeah, and like clearly the shock from that car blown, and you see like some sparks from the muffler, and so you're kind of chuckling because it's kind of funny, and then you see as she's coming out, all the townspeople gathering, and like a couple adults actually taking photos of her, and it's just this kind of like, oh, you know, she does kind of come across in that scene as like a freak show, you know, where it's the entertainment for the day.
Oh, yeah, and it's so sad.
And then you feel bad about laughing about the car.
Yeah, well, and then I put that the scene of her walking out of the courthouse is so sad, but the goddamn score doesn't help. Because the whole score is just playing with your emotions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole minor key, bring a tear to your eye score.
Yeah.
Then, because Mr. Carver's out of the picture, the affair ends with Gilbert because Mrs. Carver's going to find a new life. And just as Becky and Gilbert are, you know, getting closer and closer, Becky's grandmother gets her truck started, at least briefly. And so that's like, that's coming.
Yeah, and so Becky's grandmother is the greatest mechanic ever, by the way, for being an old grandma.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, hats off to her. But, you know, the funny thing when watching this movie, because it's clear, it's a little, there's some definite parts of it are dated. Because it takes a week to get a part, and I'm like, clearly this is pre-Amazon.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's also, they had carburetors and things, too, so.
Yeah, well, no, those trucks are still around, you know, because I think it was like an International Harvester.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but it's, yeah. Anyway, another comedic scene at the funeral for Mr. Carver. What comes to town?
The Burger Barn.
And John C. Reilly has a little tear in his eye for the Burger Barn.
Yeah, because the Burger Barn, because it's cutting edge, man. They use canola oil. That's cutting edge.
And John C. Reilly really rocks that Burger Barn uniform too.
He does. Yeah.
And then poor Gilbert, older sister Amy bakes a cake for Arnie's birthday, which is the next day. And Arnie ends up like running through the kitchen and bumping into her, and she drops the cake and it is destroyed. So Gilbert has to go to Foodland to buy a cake. And Foodland is a paradise compared to that grocery store that he works in.
They have a tank with lobsters.
Yes. Yes.
It's
although
the devil's playground.
It is a fad that'll blow over, apparently, according to Gilbert. You know, that lobster fad. So
in Texas, lobsters kind of are fad.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah. It's not like you're going to find, even in Iowa, it would be the same.
In Iowa, yeah.
So, of course, who bumps into Arnie and busts him coming out of Foodland? I'm sorry. Who does Gilbert see coming out of Foodland but his boss from the grocery store?
Yeah, but what's his boss doing there?
Exactly, exactly.
Because
like,
there was that exchange between him and his boss where he said, you know, he asked, I think his boss asks him about the prices at Foodland, and he says, I wouldn't know, I don't shop there, I'd rather die.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, I'd rather die.
So, yeah, maybe it's one of those things like running it. Remember in the old days, well, maybe you don't remember, but in the old days, if you ran into somebody that you knew in the adults-only section of the video store, well, you're both in the same section, so it's everybody's got deniability, move on.
Yeah, you don't make eye contact, you lower your eyes and you move opposite directions.
Yeah, and you don't think bad of them because they're not going to think bad of you, or else you think bad of each other, whatever. Now, if you walked out of then those swinging, saloon doors, clack, 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 when you walk out, and you're holding a bunch of X-rated videos, and you run into your nun friend who's actually wearing her habit, that's a bigger problem.
Sounds like someone spent a lot of time in the adult video section of the store.
I lived above a video store. I had to take my my laundry through the video store to make to use the pay laundry facility. I'm not proud.
We didn't have those kind of stores where I grew up. I'm just gonna say.
Well, good for you. Turns out, we live in interesting times now. That whole thing doesn't exist anymore because you can get it for free most of the time.
Yeah, why would you leave the comfort and safety of your own home?
Yeah, exactly.
True. Yeah.
So, or work, depending on where you work. or your car, depending on your data plan on your cell phone.
Or leeching somebody else's free Wi-Fi.
Yeah, or the plane, depending on whether or not you have internet on the plane. Anywho. So Gilbert gets home, and they stick the cake in the refrigerator. This is the night before. And Arnie then gets caught coming out of the kitchen with frosting on his face. And Gilbert, he loses his chicken. He flips his chicken. He grabs Arnie and takes him to the bath, and he's really frustrated. And he ends up, smacking the crap out of Arnie in a really sad moment. And so, according to Wikipedia, guilty and appalled at himself, Gilbert takes the car and runs out without another word, driving out of town. And Arnie also runs out, and his sisters go looking for him. He ends up going to Becky's, though, which is a good place, because Becky takes care of him, and actually convinces him to go swimming, which he's been scared of because of an earlier swimming incident.
Yeah, he had an unfortunate water incident.
Yeah.
By the way, she's rocking the Sinead O'Connor look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, she's, I don't know if she's purely Sinead O'Connor, but yeah, she takes her not conventional good looks and works it.
She's kind of a combo between Jem and Sinead O'Connor.
Who's Jem?
The cartoon character.
Oh my God, from Jem and the Holograms.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Come on. That was early 80s. That's not even my time, but I watched it.
Well, apparently it was in the wrong section of the video store. So after some soul searching, aided by some sweet, sweet Becky love, Gilbert returns home during the birthday party. Which, by the way, the whole town seems to attend this birthday party. Which is sweet, kind of small town, at least small town in my mind, because I've never lived in a small town. And Gilbert tries to make amends to his family. And he asks Arnie for forgiveness, which he gets eventually. And he apologizes to his mother for his behavior and promises that he's not ashamed of her, and he will not let her be hurt anymore. And just before he introduces Becky to Mama, which is a nice scene, I have a question for you. Is Crispin Glover hitting on a 15-year-old at the party?
Yes.
It's like, oh my God.
Life imitates art.
Yeah, I don't know. Is he hitting on younger people creepy, or is he just generally creepy?
I think he's just generally creepy.
Yeah, it's...
Nothing can top his performance on the David Letterman show. I think it was in the late 80s, early 90s. So,
oh, he's done these movies that he's shot and edited and whatever all himself. And he does this thing where he has he shows the hour and a half movie and then has a 3-hour question and answer period afterward. It's like, I don't know about that. Oh, by the way, guess what happened in Anchorage today? Today being 4:20, this is not a marijuana-related topic.
No, I was going to immediately go pot, so I don't know.
Earlier, well, sometime before noon, Jack White announced he was doing a acoustic performance tonight at the college auditorium. And starting at noon, they sold tickets for $3 a piece.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was like 11:15, and the news tweeted out about it or whatever, and I guess there was a line all the way around the building already, so I'm not sure how much that auditorium holds, but like that's where Henry Rollins would perform in Anchorage.
Oh, Hank.
So he introduces Becky to Mama, and they have a very sweet little scene where Mama says that she hasn't always been like this, and Becky responds that, well, she hasn't been like this either, always.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those charming, disarming moments.
Yeah. And so, following the birthday party, Bonnie climbs up the stairs to a bedroom for the first time since her husband's suicide. And later, Arnie comes in to wake her, but discovers she has died. What, by the way, has she died of, med students?
I said she likely asphyxiated.
I assumed it was a heart attack.
See, I first thought of positional asphyxia.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Kind of the CPAP kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, heart attack. Probably exacerbated by congestive heart failure for being so fat.
But, yeah, this is like one of the tearjerker scenes.
Oh, it is. It's horrible.
Because you have to watch, you know, very quickly you know she's dead, and then you have to watch Arnie slowly realize, and you see his realization that he realizes that she's dead and what that means to him. Because I don't think he fully grasps it, but he gets that she's gone, you know. Yeah. And it's devastating to him.
Oh, and he does such a good job.
There's this part of that scene where, when he runs out of the house and he's smacking himself in the head saying, I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
And I think that for me was the hard part because like no one really understands what's going on. They don't really understand why he's doing that. And that idea that he could have internalized that maybe he did it to me was just like, it was heart wrenching. Like, oh God.
Oh, and then, you know, with the scene of everybody kind of around Mama's bed, both before and after the police came and the paramedics came, and Gilbert decides that, and of course everybody immediately realizes because they have to come and get a crane to get her out of the house, and that's going to be a spectacle, and Gilbert's not going to let his mom be a spectacle in this town anymore. So they come up with this strange plan. I mean, not so strange, but the fact that they take all of their furniture out into the lawn first, I think, is a little strange. Because how does nobody go to jail for that?
What do you mean?
Well, they set the house on fire. That's arson.
Well, but it's not really. It's their house. That's just charges.
It's their house, and they don't have any insurance. So what?
Well, I guess you're right. Yeah, I guess you're right. If there's no insurance claim, it's not fraud. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way they have insurance. The house isn't insurable. The foundation's bad, and it's falling apart. Their dad built the house, so it wasn't likely insurable anyway. I think the only thing you could get charged with nowadays is abuse of a corpse.
Yeah, probably. Although, it depends on the laws.
Mr. Carver.
Well, and it depends on the laws of the state, because, I mean, if they were doing their home cremation, whatever.
Yeah.
Because you can bury your own in most states, in your own land.
Well, and Mr. Carver says, when Mr. Carver, before he dies, when he pulls Gilbert into his office, you know, he kind of reads him for not having any insurance. And as the man of the house, you know, what are you going to do for your family? Like, because they don't have insurance. They kind of fill that in as a side effect.
And then?
You know, so they put all the valuables outside because they wanted to keep the valuable, the keepsakes.
Oh, yeah. No, I get why they did that, but I guess it makes sense. If there's no one going to be prosecuting anybody for arson, then, yeah, it makes total sense.
And the coroner already said, like, she's dead. you know, she wasn't murdered. She didn't die in the house, you know, like in the house fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then a year later, cuts to a year later, and Gilbert and Arnie are still waiting by the side of the road. And Gilbert kind of describes what happens to his family after his mother's death. And they're waiting for Becky to show up in the RV with her grandmother.
Because Arnie's about to turn 19.
Yeah. It's kind of a bittersweet ending. Although, does Gilbert explain where he and Arnie have been living for the year?
No. He's probably shacked up in Betty's house.
Oh, maybe so. Who knows?
Or it could be living in Bobby's hearse.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, you know, he probably, because he doesn't have any money, really couldn't contribute to Bobby's business anyway. How's your mother doing, sir? I haven't seen her at church very often.
I haven't seen her at church, yeah. What a creepy little bastard.
Oh, totally creepy, but fun. So, anyway, so yeah, so, even though I was totally dreading watching it, I mean, I'm not exaggerating in any way how much I was dreading watching it. I was happy I did. It was a good movie, and the acting was superb, and the cinematography was great. And I just think that it's not really my genre of movie anyway.
Well, it's a movie for the feels.
It is, exactly. It's a, and I'm only guessing here because I haven't seen these, but it seems like a Fried Green Tomatoes, Steel Magnolias kind of movie.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I thought that Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil was going to be, but that was not.
Oh. So, did Arnie have a cicada in the jar at one point? Is that was his pet? Is that what it was?
Either yeah. That or a big grasshopper. I don't know.
They were actually, so those are actually cicadas. Those are the things that make that, you know, noise at night.
Wait, hold on. Wait. You have to make it a little bit louder.
Oh, there's those bugs that usually they come every couple of years to every 7 years, and they make that kind of noise at night.
Okay, you got to make the noise one more time louder.
It's like.
Excellent. But those of you who I work with will recognize this technique as making the person say the noise three times. Actually, partly because it was hard to hear the first two times, but also because sometimes it's funny to make people say noises that they say again. Like, for instance, I hear this weird sound in the woods. Okay, can you try to make the sound? It sounds like... Okay, hold on. Can you make that one more time? Okay, one more time. Okay, we'll be sending someone out there to check that, ma'am. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break so you guys talk amongst yourselves. Not in a Creepy Way, we'll be back after these messages. As always, we'd love feedback. Call us on our feedback hotline at 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169.
So what shall we talk about? So should Sarnoff get the death penalty?
You know, that's an interesting discussion. Honestly, I don't think so.
Why?
Personally, I don't. I think that he will suffer more in the type of prison they will have him in than death.
I don't want him to suffer.
Well, I think about, like, if they put him to death, right?
Yeah.
In a federal prison, it's going to be a lethal injection thing. It'll be, the process is relatively quick. But in general, regardless of how he goes, whether it's in prison for the rest of his life or a death penalty, he's going to be turned into a martyr by people who follow that kind of extremist ideology. And I just think that they've had so many of the victims of the bombing, the ones who lived, and the families of those who died, come out and say, you know, we really don't want him to be executed, that even though it's clear that he did it, there is that part within me that kind of wants to see him suffer in the longest way possible.
Yeah, but see, I don't think he deserves to continue to take up air and resource. I think we should just end him, because I don't see any positive outcome to his his having a long suffering life. So, I'm not a resident, so I don't, you know, and it doesn't directly impact me, and I don't have anybody that was, killed or injured, so that doesn't impact me. But from a terrorist standpoint, I'm like, I just don't, I'm not huge on the death penalty anyway, because I think it's unevenly applied in this country disproportionately to minorities. However, there's no doubt that he did it, and there's no doubt that he killed people, and there's no doubt that he would do it again if given the opportunity. So I don't know. I have a hard time thinking we should just keep him alive because he will suffer, because he's not going to suffer. He's going to be in jail, but he's going to be sheltered and he will be fed, and he feels that he did what he wanted to do. So he feels justified in his cause.
He does. But so on the Boston Globe, which is kind of one of our local big papers, they did a thing called what will happen if Sarnaev dies and what will happen if he lives in terms of the process of the death penalty. And when they broke it down, they tried to stay out of what he should get and just went into, this is where he would go, this is what kind of cell he would be in on both cases. This is how long he would likely be on death row, blah, blah, blah. And regardless of which one they do, even if they sentence him to death, he will still be on death row for many years, up to a decade, because he has appeals he can exhaust. We don't sentence people to death and then execute them like they do in like China, and then build a family for the bullet or whatever. And the thing that they actually said in the articles, and my brother backed up, because my brother works at the unit where they execute people, the amount of money that the state or the government spends on the actual process of death row and execution is more than keeping the person alive in prison for the rest of their life. Now, that's more of a flaw of the system itself, but it's very weird because I'm generally not a big fan of the death penalty for many reasons that you said. It is disproportionately applied. And then there's always that concern of like, what if the evidence wasn't there to prove they did it? Well, we know he did it. But at the same time, the way that we execute people, it's quick and painless. But if you have someone whose true belief is that he did something good and that when he dies, especially if he dies a martyr where he's killed in the line of duty, that he will go to heaven and he will get these wonderful things happen to him. It seems to me, and this is more of the angry, revengey part of my human psyche, says that I kind of don't want him to have that. I kind of want him to be, in a cell that's no bigger than, 8x8, which is about what the cells he would be in would be, where he doesn't get to see the sky and he's only allowed out of his cell for maybe 1 hour a week. And, regardless of how long he lives, it's not going to be a good quality of life. But that's the vengeful part of myself, I guess.
So your local Massachusettsians or whatever they are, mostly are against the death penalty then? For him,
in Boston and the surrounding suburbs, the more liberal part of the state, absolutely. Most of them are more for life in prison because the state doesn't have a death penalty.
It's a federal, so I realize.
Yeah, and so most people here, at least in this part of the state, are very anti-death penalty. And have been for a long time. Now, if you go out to the other side of the state, more western Massachusetts, where it's more country, that's when you get into more of the, they want his head and they want to do it via firing squad and all this kind of, like Texas justice kind of stuff.
Well, Utah justice now because Utah brought back the firing squad.
I saw that. And I also saw that a couple of the states went to the nitrogen thing that we discussed. I think we discussed it a couple.
Yeah, last week.
A month ago. Oh, it was just last week.
It was last week.
Well, because this has been going on here. Like, the Sarnaev trial and that process has been going on for so long that, and then the marathon was, today. So tomorrow, I believe, is when they start actually discussing the penalty phase. So
right. That's why I saw it on the news. So I was, you know, they were, because Lawrence O'Donnell was talking about the marathon and the sentencing. So I just wanted your take because you're a little more, you're a little more local to it. And so I thought you might have some interesting perspective. So I appreciate the input.
It's weird. There was a part of me, I think, that was surprised I wasn't more pro-death penalty on him. And I don't know why that is. I think some of it's been my conversations with my brother. Hearing him talk about the execution process and all that, I'm just like, I don't know, maybe that's changed something within me. Because I used to be more for the death penalty as a whole than I am now. And I don't know what in me changed, but something did.
But to talk about the voicemail that we got from Drew in Anchorage.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey guys, this is Drew from Anchorage. I've been really enjoying your weekly Santa Barbara segment. I'm hoping that continues in future podcasts. Although I am a little dismayed that with how many mentions Santa Barbara has had on your podcast. You have not even talked about the most important storyline, the Mason-Julia storyline. So maybe you guys can rectify that in future podcasts, but appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
But the whole Santa Barbara thing, which is hilarious, because I can go on about Santa Barbara for months and months. We could have a weekly Santa Barbara recap storyline interjection. So
okay, well, let me just, to satisfy the email, let's talk about the Mason-Julia storyline.
Okay. So Mason was having issues, and I think he was an alcoholic, I believe, and got put into the convent to break his alcoholism, where he met Mary, who was a nun. And then he basically corrupted Mary into leaving the nunnery. And then they had this ill-fated off-again, on-again romance where she would realize that he wasn't really a great person, and so she would flee, and then he would come back. He would get her to come back, and he would convince her. And there was this back and forth, this constant love story that came up. But then, you know, Gina came into the picture, Gina DeMott. And so there was this strange Gina triangle, and then eventually Gina married Cece, and then was in the middle of, like, divorcing Cece. But in the midst of all of this, Mason and Mary kept going back into this romance, on again, off again, on again, off again. And then I think she ended up pregnant. And then in the middle of this terrible giant windstorm, they were on top of one of the Capwell hotels where Gina had erected this giant Capwell cookie sign because she was now making chocolate chip cookies. Capwell's chocolate chip cookies to capitalize on the name. And during the windstorm, Mary and Mason were up there with Gina, and the giant sea blew over and killed Mary.
Okay, now where does Julia come in? Is it really just Mason and Mary? Or was he thinking of Gina?
Julia, I don't remember Julia. I mean, I don't remember where she came in. I remember her, but I don't remember at what point. But, you know, there's many story arcs. There's multiple story arcs. Because you get into the whole... Because I think, if I want to remember correctly, was Mary working with Kane, who I think Kane rescued Eden after they tried to kill her in the plane crash and she had amnesia and all this blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's years and years and years of story threads. So I'm not sure where we would even begin.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to ask him about that then. So, and just to refresh everybody's memory here, of course, Santa Barbara talk is that Mason was brother to Kelly and what was the other Capwell sister's name?
Eden
Capwell, and he was kind of the playboy ne'er-do-well brother.
Similar to the younger brother, because Channing was the older brother who was it Channing the older brother that ended up being crazy serial killer.
Yeah, similar to Young and the Restless, Billy, who I think is Billy Baldwin. No, not Billy Baldwin. What was his name? I don't know. Kelly used to watch Young and the Restless, so I knew all those characters just from osmosis. And then way back in the day, I remember watching days of our lives when our mother was home in the afternoons. And then, so I knew those characters and I knew Santa Barbara and I guess Young and the Restless. But now, no stories for us. We barely watch any TV. Although, lots of Wander Over Yonder and what's the latest thing she likes? Johnny Test? Lab Rats? I don't know what it's called. Maybe Lab Rats. That and reruns of Sam and Cat before Cat became that singer. What's her name? Ariana Grande. She was a Disney girl before.
You might as well be speaking another language at this point.
Yeah, well, that's okay. So, yeah. Okay, so from Santa Barbara to Ariana Grande and Disney Junior Talk or Nickelodeon or whatever. I think it was Disney. So thank you again, Travis, for joining us. I told Jason we need to have a third on this one because there's a possibility that all I'm going to do is cry during this episode. Poor mama's so fat she can't get out of the house.
You did fine.
Yeah, no, it was fine. I even recommend the movie. And I think we need to see Tropic Thunder sooner than later because otherwise the full retard comment just seems really callous by me.
I'll put it on the list.
Okay, Tropic Thunder. Ask for it by name. By the way,
right.
Here, I'll give you a spoiler on Hannibal. Maybe I'll sweeten the thing for you. One of the characters in Hannibal, played by Scott Thompson.
No.
Yep. And he's great.
Do you mean Buddy Scott Thompson?
Yes.
Yep.
So, let me tell you, it's great to see John C. Reilly and Crispin Glover in this movie, and it was great to see Scott Thompson in that other movie. And by the way, do you know Dave Foley's story? Dave Foley has had a bunch of work lately, but it's a good thing, because here's the quick version of the Dave Foley story. Dave Foley, Kids in the Hall. He was making couple million dollars a year, maybe, during his heyday. And then his heyday kind of fell off. Well, in the meantime, he gets divorced. And the divorce laws of Canada put the alimony or whatever they're calling it, they're calculating it on your past wages, like your highest past wages. So he had to go find work, any work he could. He did like a one-man show and stuff, not because he was enjoying it, but because he had to pay the bills because he had to come up with enough money to pay his ex-wife.
Wow.
This, by the way, did not strengthen their relationship, as you could imagine. Like when I heard him talking about an interview, he was very, very bitter. So, you know.
Wow.
I think maybe it's child support, but one of the two, he's like, oh yeah, I need to work bad now.
Well, you know, desperation makes for the best comedian, doesn't it?
Sometimes, yeah, exactly.
I don't wish ill upon him, of course, but.
Well, speaking of which, there's a new Kevin Pollak documentary coming out.
Oh.
It's called Misery Loves Comedy.
Oh boy.
And he interviewed a whole bunch of comedians. And I think one of the questions he tries to answer in it is, do you need to be miserable to be a good comic, to be funny? And as he has said himself when he was on, I can't remember which show lately, the answer to Mark Maron, of all people, talks about how his whole career has been spent being bitter and angry and miserable. But Mark Maron answers the question, no, you don't have to be miserable to be funny. But in his case, it didn't hurt.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But, I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, thank you guys both. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.